decades of intuitive work and research at the Center for Applied Intuition offered Dr. William Kautz a very high and wide platform to dive into many realms not available to the materialistic scientist. Bill is one of the pioneers who, from the 1950s, began delving into the development and practical applications for intuition in science, technology, business, and spirit. You intuited yourself here, so stay tuned. I'm Robin Clare, and this is Tributaries. Bill, thank you so much for joining us. Greetings from Boulder.
Glad to be with you, Robin.
How are things in Prague today?
Well, we started out real fine with a nice warm day. By now, it's getting pretty cold and overcast. Yeah, but, you know, Prague's a wonderful place to live.
That's what I hear. Bill, let's get started with some of your personal history at MIT. I know you were there in 1951. What was your focus there, and what were some of the major research studies going on at the time there?
Well, keep in mind that in 1951, I was a student, a very young student, and I wasn't really very much in touch with research going on there at all. I was struggling because I was a young 17-year-old kid from Seattle who had gone through ordinary high school, and here I was immersed in with all these New England prep kids, you know, who gone through prep school before they got to MIT. So I felt pretty low and dumb. And that was the main impression, and I'll say struggle, for the first few years there. But, you know, finally we came out all right. And as I look back now, a long time later, I can appreciate that this grand institution did me a lot of good, and it's really a leading spot for research in the world at this point. They're doing a lot of really exciting things. I think my only regret was that they didn't have much in the humanities area, and I had some beginning interests in that, but really there was nothing they were offering at all.
Yes, I'm
sure. The evidence was feeble.
Yes, I'm sure at that time any of the social sciences were considered pseudoscience and not quite up to snuff in the scientific realm.
Well, sorry to report, Robin, but they're still pseudoscience.
Oh, darn. Well, here, I'll call you back in another 50 years.
maybe it.
Well, I know you then went to Stanford as a research scientist, and they're very often cutting edge, but I'm sure what you wanted to do, the applied intuition research, was still even more cutting edge. Was that a difficult sell? How did that all come about?
Well, when I came to Stanford, it wasn't to Stanford University itself, but to an outreach institution that they had just started. It was called Stanford Research Institute. They recognized that there was a lot of money to be made and, you know, better place in the world that they had a separate research arm than trying to fit it into the university. It was soon changed to SRI International, and it's now a very well-known, even famous organization with several thousand people. So I got in very early on that, and that was a real blessing, I could tell you that. You asked about what they were doing?
Yes.
Well, they spread themselves very broadly over almost all fields of science and technology. I got in on a computer lab that had just opened up. And, you know, at that time, in 1951, computers were just a university, experimental university thing. They didn't exist yet. We had no laptops or even desktops. And desktop computers. So I had the chance to participate in the creation of the first commercial computer. This was sponsored by the Bank of America. And it went on for 5-6 years, and it was a great success. We built a computer then with 8,000 vacuum tubes, if you can imagine that. And it was a problem to keep it going for a half an hour before the vacuum just burned out. So that was a great opportunity.
Certainly.
So, it opened up a big door for me, you know, and I went on to participate in creating a computer science to stand behind this and support this technological accomplishment. Because at that time, there was no science behind computer engineering. You just built it. And this had to be created. So that went on for several years. Then I got more into geophysics, yeah.
And then you did go into intuition study and research and developed the Center for Applied Intuition, which has a long-standing history and quite brilliant research. And so can you share with us how that came about, and then we'll dive into what you were actually doing there?
Like many people who go into science and engineering, after a few decades, it began to become, well, not exactly boring, but it didn't feel very fulfilling. Science, you know, is a pretty, it's big and powerful, but it's a narrowly focused domain of human activity. It's concerned only with what science can do, which is materialistic things. But as soon as you step outside of materiality, science is really helpless. You know, it doesn't tell us how to love our children or how to even to improve our love for our children. It doesn't deal with mental factors, mind factors at all. And there's so much that goes on in the world, especially psychological, that science just can't do anything about. Of course, attempts are made, but they just don't get anywhere. So I began to get interested in some of these other areas and felt like I wanted to gradually step out of science. But still, the means of the methodology for research is still somewhat relevant. So I tried to study this mysterious thing called intuition, something that all of us humans have, but we really don't know how to work with it or how to talk about it. It's almost a joke these days about talking about women's intuition. Isn't that right? Yeah. So,
I hope not.
You hope it's not a joke, you mean.
Exactly.
So I put together a team of people, and we started working with that. There wasn't much straight scientific research you could do on intuition. But I did start collecting a lot of data, and I started working with people who happened to have or decided to have a stronger intuition than is normal. That is, they had the capacity to go into themselves and tap information that couldn't be gotten any other way. You know, intuition is a means for generating inner knowing, understanding, even information that is inherent within the human mind. It's not something you do with science. Science, in its own way of generating information, new knowledge, but as I mentioned, it doesn't cover very much.
Yes, I would even argue or want to at least bring up that within the confines of what most people think of mind, I would say it's not even got anything to do with the mind.
Wait, what does it? You mean science?
No, intuition.
Oh, well, where else could it be? You know, it's not in the brain, that's for sure.
Right. I'm suggesting new vocabulary here, perhaps.
Yes, but I think what we mean by mind is something broader than brain, but it includes all mental activity. It includes the capacities of the human being that are in the mental area. So anyway, I would say intuition belongs in the mind, just the way compassion, kindness, forgiveness, and so forth, belong in the mind. It's something you do with your mind. But anyway, we discovered a lot of wonderful things about this funny thing called intuition.
Like what?
Well, we found out that it's not limited to dealing just with human feelings and what are normally thought of as mental activity, but it can also be used as a source of information that science would like to obtain but doesn't know how. So this includes scientific matters, which is an advantage because what science can do is to verify information that it has from any source by its own methods. It could verify them in the sense that it could determine whether they're true or false and make them credible. This is one of the main roles of science in our society, is its ability to verify or validate information that comes from any source. So we came up with some projects that we could do that where we generated scientific-type information. But beyond the edge of what science was able to come up with, and we were able to establish that what we obtained was true. So that's I felt and still feel that this is a pretty significant accomplishment, and it's taken a long time to get this out into the public domain and show that intuition really works for this purpose, and that it's therefore possibly useful as an alternative, where we could say supplemental means of bringing knowledge to humankind. We don't have to rely on science to tell us about reality. We've got another way to do that.
Yes, well, it's interesting that so many, you know, you hear so often that it was a dream that Benjamin Franklin had, or the folks, Crick, you know, in the DNA and RNA, seeing the symbols. It came to them certainly outside of that realm of the brain. So it's funny that it's taken so long to be taken seriously.
Yeah, well, that's true, and scientists are pretty defensive about their position. They think they've got the root, scientists generally think they've got the root to all knowledge with a scientific method, and it simply isn't true at all. That's right. Dreams and psychic ability, ordinary women's intuition, so to speak, and the inner knowing that the businessmen are forced to use to resolve problems where they can't get enough data. These are all manifestations of intuition. Intuition is the human faculty that lies underneath that makes it possible. You see, intuition is not a phenomenon in itself, or even just a technique. It's an inner capacity for acquiring information, knowledge, and understanding.
Yes, well, I did quite a bit of reading on your appliedintuition.net website, and I was kind of it was kind of curious to read that highly skilled intuitives testify that there is nothing to be afraid of. And the reason they do this is because so many people are afraid of it or afraid of going there. What do you think is behind that? And has that changed, do you think? Or
well, I guess it's called ego. We're all a little bit, if not a lot, afraid of what might be discovered about ourselves if we look. And, you know, there's a lot of advice that we don't want to accept or even examine. We have beliefs that we hold on to for dear life when we know actually that they're just beliefs and they aren't necessarily true at all. It's part of human nature to define ourselves as limited with a fence around who we are. As if we're in a shell, and we're not too eager about finding out what's out beyond that. This holds for intuitive knowing too. When you go to a psychic or what we call an expert intuitive, one who's demonstrated their really good skill, intuitive reception, then you're in a different state of mind because you've taken the opportunity to inquire more deeply, and it works a lot better. But if somebody who's intuitive should just foolishly walk up and start telling you things about yourself, you'd be highly resistive. So it's the old authority question. Doctors work with it too in getting medical advice. When you walk into their office or to a hospital, you know, you listen to what's said, but normally you don't necessarily want to hear it. That's the way. There's an authority issue in the passing on of intuitive information.
Yeah, that's very true. It's interesting that people have a hard time moving out of, you know, you just mentioned doctors, and I know lots of times when someone is ill and they get certain advice from a doctor but maybe want to check other things out, it's difficult for them to move out of that realm. You know, there are family members who are saying, no, you have to do what they say, or this will happen, or that will happen and you'll die, or whatever. And it's, you know, it would certainly enhance all of our lives to develop that intuitive piece so we could get more correct information for ourselves rather than relying on the information highway that's out there.
Sure. Well, intuition certainly has a strong role to play and has played a strong role in medicine. How are diagnoses made, you know, when somebody comes in with a set of symptoms? It's comfortable to believe that this is part of medical science, but it isn't. Medical science provides part of it, you know. But in the final analysis, the doctor has to make an intuitive assessment of what action to take, what treatment to give. And it's often almost, and it's very often, very ambiguous. He doesn't have a clear-cut way of converting symptoms into treatment.
Well, it's
all into cure, you know.
Right. Well, it's a difficult thing because, you know, if you start looking at things that are true, you know, you end up working with ratios of what's normal, what isn't normal, 15% of the people this, and, you know, someone can smoke their entire life and not get lung cancer, another person will. So there is no real truth to disease. It's very nebulous.
Well, or if it exists, it's not to be accessed through medical science. There are principles of health, even mental health, that go way beyond what medicine deals with. And a lot of these can be accessed through an intuitive process. And this is what many physicians do, of course. They have their own intuition operating, so they would be loath to admit it. But, you know, discoveries over the last even 30 years are showing that the mind played a central role in disease. it's not just something on the side that watching what's going on. It's helping to generate the conditions, the very conditions that it's trying to understand. This is why medical intuitives are having a good business these days. You know, it's finally becoming a little bit more acceptable to listen to them sometimes. So they can enter a scene where somebody is having symptoms and tell you immediately what's going wrong in the body and maybe in the mind. So this is happening, though it's certainly not widely accepted. But they find, these persons find their place in the world. You know, they work themselves into clinics or cooperating with doctors and quietly do their thing. You don't read much about it.
I was intrigued to read about some of your research studies that you did and how you did dive into certain medical disorders like bipolar and then describing appropriate therapies for treating HIV and AIDS. Maybe we could talk about those two and start with the bipolar disorders.
Okay. Bipolar was one of the four projects we undertook to try to use expert intuitives to understand scientific or medical matters in a way that they could later be shown to be correct. This doesn't hold for, say, recovering ancient history. This is quite possible to do intuitively, but how do you prove it that it's right? You know, you can't. So bipolar was a good one. I worked with a psychiatrist, Paul Groff, in Ottawa on this, an old friend of many years, and we did a series of sessions. We work with several intuitives at once, and we call it intuitive consensus, because we pull out the common elements in all the information they provide and say, well, this must be true, and then we try to go about and prove that it's true by scientific means. And this is what we did. So bipolar, I don't know how much you know about it or how much anybody knows about it, but it's a tragic mental disease in which one oscillates between, it used to be called manic depression, oscillates between states of heavy depression and then mania. And it's not understood at all. This happens. There's no mechanism or model of the mind for understanding how this can happen, you see? There is a treatment for it, but it's not a complete treatment. It's taking lithium carbonate every day, pill. But this is just symptomatic. It quiets down both the mania and the depression, but it doesn't make it go away, and it certainly doesn't cure it. That's been around now for like 40 years, and its use is widespread, but we're still stuck with the problem of trying to understand this disease. Well, the intuitives provided a fair introduction to it, despite its complexity. The most impressive part of this was, for evidence, was that we asked if the disease wasn't at least partially hereditary, because it does show up in families and in twins, you know, and that sort of thing. And it was acknowledged, the intuitives acknowledged, yes, it is partially hereditary, though it's much more complicated than that. But this is certainly not the way to go in your research, because you aren't going to get anywhere. Well, this was at a time when that research was just started. And in the course of time, it was very deeply pursued into. Paul, in his work, had 1,500 individuals who were bipolar, and he had the DNAs of all of them, and they were trying to figure out what they had in common. You know, is there some genetic signal or flag that these people are going to all come down with bipolar? Nothing has been found. Nothing. So the intuitives are absolutely right. This is not the way to go. And then much other advice was given on how to treat the symptom and to ameliorate it to actions you can take in daily life or with certain drugs. Yeah. So this is a pretty good example that intuitive consensus can be a help.
And so what was the main thing that the intuitives decided or came up with regarding the bipolar disorder?
They said it's a very complex disease, somewhat like cancer, even though the symptoms are all the same, you know? And, therefore, you're going to have to go at it from not just a physical standpoint of looking for neuropeptides or particular changes in the body, but you're going to have to take a spiritual approach as well, because this disease has originated outside of the body. It's like something that the individual's essence or soul has decided it's going to live with and came into life that way. And you're not going to be able to treat it just on the physical level.
Right.
But actually, one of the main conclusions, though it doesn't lead immediately to treatment, because we don't know how to treat these kinds of these diseases that have this kind of a spiritual origin. But there are physical factors also, and in the long run, we're going to have to understand those too.
Of course, there are certainly the precursors. It would be great to get into those, and that's exactly what you're speaking about. It just made me wonder in this moment how the shaman of the tribe in the old days, if they had more of a success with this sort of thing.
They certainly did, at least some of them. Though, you know, we don't have good data on who's a good shaman and who's not.
Right. Or pre-data times, even.
That's right. And I'm sure they had plenty of failures, which just are given up on and nobody knows. I mean, it's just the way things happen, you know.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like, you know, where you're talking about this being at a soul level or a spiritual matter, you know, it may even look like they were given up on, but maybe that wasn't the case at all. Maybe it was just so determined that this would be the state of living that that initial invisible force was more than anything else.
That's right, sure. I'm sure that was happening too. These things that have a large spiritual component are just so hard to deal with, especially in the modern world when this area is not given much credence at all. Like, everything's supposed to be scientific and materialistic, and nobody can take very seriously something that says this was arranged before birth that you have this problem. And you know, the doctors shrug their shoulders and walk away. There's good evidence from many other quarters that this is actually happening.
Yes, and we had a guest within the last year on Tributaries, and he was talking about healthcare and seniors and the whole dying and death process not even being so much a medical issue. It's a very spiritual one, and I just thought that was such a great point to bring up.
Okay, well, I'll sign my name to that.
Okay. Good, we'll start circulating the petition.
We'll have more with Dr. William Kautz next week. You can reach him at appliedintuition.net. And for any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. For podcasting at iTunes, it's Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.